Hey, everybody, welcome to a conversation with Trevor Doyle. Doyle from Spirit Talk Show. And it's at, let's just get this in the front end, spirittalkshow.info. Is that correct, Trevor?
That is, or .com. They can go to .com too.
Oh, they have, you have a .com as well? I saw that on your thing was .info.
Yeah, I'm .info is what I built it on, but I have the .com also on .net.
Oh, well, good for you. I was thinking, well, maybe you didn't, but thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, Trevor and I have a little bit of history because I was on. My eyebrows look like I'm angry. I'm not angry at you, Trevor, honestly.
Well, I was late, so I understand why you might be late.
But I was on the Spirit Talk Show not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And what a fun experience that was. So tell people what that is about real quick.
Yeah, my Spirit Talk Show is a... it's just basically adults reading stories to you, and these stories are generated by AI. So it's Spirit Talk Show, bedtime stories for grownups. And people could come on, and we create these story prompts, and we just, whatever AI creates, we read, cold read on the spot. And sometimes the results are kind of profound, and sometimes they're funny, and sometimes they're just insane. As when we read our stories, there were some pretty funny, insane results. And it's just really, you know, being people enjoy having stories read to them, and these stories are just original, one of a kind, created on the spot stories.
It was really quite fun. I'll tell people if you have the opportunity to be on there. I mean, it's fantastic. It was fantastically fun for me, but you know, I do like to read stories, so. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe if you hated stories, it wouldn't be so fun.
Well, I guess if people hated stories, they probably wouldn't want to listen.
Yeah, maybe they would, but you never know. There's a lot of people who do things they hate. So
I think a lot of people, I'm turning on my light so I have better lighting here because my, oh, there it is. Am I more beautiful now?
It made a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, my listeners who listen to the show, and you can hear it on Apple, I see on the little stream on the bottom there, it says listen on KBOO 96.5, but you can also get it on Apple and Spotify and iHeartRadio and YouTube and those places. Look up Spirit Talk Show. But people who listen are saying they like to listen because it's like a friendly voice reading them a story and talking. They listen when they're doing chores. They listen when they're in bed at night. They listen when they're alone in the apartment, so, or driving in a car, of course, a lot of people do that, or the gym. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope people will give it a listen. It's a fun show to do. I'm doing a recording tonight, and of course
it's neat.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh no, I was just it's really quite fun, and you know, we talked about it ahead of time, and I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting, but I really didn't think that it would be as much fun as it was. I mean, maybe I just miss reading stories out loud rather than just in my head these days. And so, you know, I was like, well, this, you know, even though it's not, you know, I guess we put prompts into it, right? So we put some prompts in. But other than that, I mean, it was kind of created out of, you know, its large language model, whatever that, whatever you want to call that. And yeah, it was actually quite enjoyable. The stories weren't terrible. Some of them were very interesting, but they weren't, you know, horrible. I mean, you know, I've probably paid for more terrible stories than that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you know, I've discovered that the more information you give the story prompt, the better story you're going to get. Like, if you tell it, just write me a funny story, it's going to write something about the caliber of a sixth, fifth grader. But if you give it, like, tell me a story and give it more, like details and a lot more information about the characters, it writes some cool stories. Like, we have a really fun one we did a few weeks ago on Shakespeare, and it rewrote the to be or not to be speech relating to toilet paper, and it was really good. It was really funny. I'm definitely going to keep it for my compilation of stories, like, in the future when I publish them.
Yeah, and we talked about that as well. I think I did one of mine was like Stephen King story about dental hygiene or something, which was kind of creepy when I read that one. But that's what we asked for, and it gave it to us.
Yeah, and your Mad Max one was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was fun. The Jack and Jill Mad Max variant. And but what inspired you to do this? I mean, it seems a little, you know, different.
Yeah, well, I've always been an early adopter of technology, and I've been kind of keeping my eye on AI for a while. And the show actually evolved. It started as a paranormal show. So if anybody listens to the first season, there's stories about ghost experiences, my own personal ghost experiences and people I brought in. And then later on, it evolved into reading these stories and then I kept the name because I thought, well, Spirit Talk Show still works for, like, AI is kind of like the ghost in the machine, you know?
Right. Yeah. I was going to say that, ghost in the machine. There you go.
Yeah. So I kind of kept, I liked the name and I thought the podcast or radio show kind of evolved into this. And I've always wanted to do a podcast, and for years, I'm a big fan of podcasts. I've listened to you, Bob, years ago, and
seriously, you listened years ago? Get out of town.
Well, I think you've been doing it for a few years, one or two, I think.
Yeah, a couple, three. A couple decades.
A couple of three decades, you mean, right?
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And I always wanted to do it. You know, I have a background in film and audio production, and I decided to just do it. I started last October, and it's, you know, and it hasn't taken off. I'm not getting my 200 million from Spotify yet, but
it's always a tough row to hoe, yeah, there, you know, as they say in the Midwest. So now you mentioned your ghost experience. Could you do like maybe the elongated TV guide version of it? A synopsis of, so this is what drew you initially to doing this, but obviously that you decided, well, this is not quite as sustainable as I had hoped, I guess. But what was your experience?
I'm talking to you from my house. My house is an old farmhouse. And right out here, actually, this door right here, there is my son's bedroom. I took a picture about 3 years ago, and there's a face looking out the door. Looks like a white face. And then I had a paranormal group come and investigate my house. And since then, I've heard things in the house, like definitely footsteps at night. You know, I live here alone. My sons are here half time. They're older now, so they're here more often. But I've heard footsteps, and I've heard my kids' voices calling me. I've heard my oldest son and I have heard my youngest son calling us to the back room. So just a lot of very weird, scary experiences. I'm a math and science guy. I didn't believe in it. I was a skeptic. Did not believe in this stuff at all. Mm-hmm. And after living in my house is like maybe 60 years old, and there's three confirmed deaths in my house, and it's an old farmhouse in Plymouth, California, which is a little farm town up in close to Tahoe. And there's been ghost experiences, and it's hard to explain them away. And since then, I've even had the Sci-Fi Channel has been here, and this October, actually, Discovery Channel was here filming an episode for a TV show called My Haunted Hometown, which actually I think I'm going to be on.
Really? How fantastic!
September, January, there's going to be an episode featuring my house, and people can see my house in an investigation for that group that investigated my house is called Lingering Souls Paranormal. If you looked it up on YouTube, you can see the actual investigation at my house, not a investigation, not the one where I saw the ghost face and stuff. I mean, I don't know if I can on this streaming, if I can show you the face that, but I mean, if it will even work, I mean, people are actually watching this, right? So here's the picture that I took of my son's room, and I will zoom in into a second, right? Mm-hmm. Let me zoom in, right? See that face in the top right corner there?
Yes, look at that. That's, and it's kind of like a bit of a below that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something there, and that was just a night we had on investigation. I was standing in the living room, and I heard a creak towards my son's bedroom, and that's the room, like not the room that's right there. It's around the corner there. And mm-hmm. So my house has weird things happen. And so I got involved in the ghost stuff, and I started doing the ghost radio show. And then honestly, it's hard to get paranormal investigation. People are fun, wonderful people, not always reliable to come on your show. So it wasn't sustainable to do a show every week, whereas I was relying on ghost investigators to come to my show. So I started.
If you had a ghost there every week, maybe they'd show up every time.
I mean, there was a few times because the actual studio I do it in, it's a real radio studio in Sacramento, but it's an old school that's 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And the location itself has ghost experiences. So
interesting. Like, that's pretty wild. Now, the weird thing is, so you took the picture. Now, did you notice the face before you took the picture, or did you notice the face after you took the picture?
No, I just noticed it was dark when I took the picture, and I just snapped the picture, and it wasn't until the group was there, and when they went home, I was looking through the pictures, and I saw it, and I emailed it to them, so I didn't really notice till later. And that room is, that room, my youngest son's bedroom, my dog, who's actually on the ground right here beside me, mm-hmm. Luna, will not go into that room, and my youngest son, he sleeps there now, but he would not sleep in that room for many years.
Yeah. Now, that the dog thing strikes a nerve with me. So I've had an experience, and I don't think we even talked about this, no. But and the funny, you kept telling how old your house is. I had an experience in a house that was probably like a, you know, mid 2000s, you know, what would you call it? Cul-de-sac house, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was there temporarily because of some stuff. And we had a shadow person that I saw, my son saw, separately. And you mentioned the dog thing. The dog, there was an area in the dog, we were there temporarily. So the basement was empty. It wasn't finished. Mm-hmm. And so then the dog would play down there. We'd play with the ball, right?
Yeah.
And there was a corner the dog would never go into, even if the ball went in that corner. It wouldn't go get the ball, even though everywhere else in the basement it would go.
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
there's some weird, I wonder if anybody's ever done a connection, you know, kind of a more scientific study on the connection between those kind of things and animals, because I think that there is something to it, because I mean, it was, this dog would go everywhere else, but that one spot, and literally we'd throw this ball. It was just a big concrete, you know, basement, and it would bounce it all around. He'd chase it everywhere, but he would not go into the one corner.
Well, you know, like my dog Luna is obsessed with me. She's sitting here right beside me right now. Wherever I go in the house, she'll be beside me. And when I go into the back room or my Airbnb, I have an Airbnb in the back that I rent on Airbnb, but she will not enter that space. And that's where one of the people died. And my youngest son's bedroom is where one of the people died, and she will not enter these two spaces. She tries desperately to come in, but she does that, you know, that thing at the door where she tries to decide, can I?
Oh, right, dog indecisiveness, maybe.
And then she kind of lies. If you try to tell her to go in, she kind of makes herself really small on the ground. Uh-huh. That's why you can't drag her in. So she's, and my other dog goes into those spaces, but Luna is, I guess, more sensitive. And really? So, I mean, I got so used to this things in my house, like down the hall here, if you go to the hall to my bathroom, there's a closet door that is always open. And I'm so used to, I walk past it, and by habit, I just close it, and I'm home alone, and I'll walk around the house. I'll come back later. I'll walk past it. It'll be open again, and I'll just close it. I'm just so used to, I mean, I'm the only one in the house. Nobody opened it, but it's open every time I walk past it. And so
that's bizarre.
It's become my rote now to just close it when I walk past.
You know, you're annoying the hell out of this ghost by closing that door because they want it open.
They really want it open.
They're going, Doyle, quit with the door. Leave it.
Well, I mean, sometimes I leave it open. But it's, you know, it's my house now. And it's so, I mean, I don't know how I feel about it, because being involved in paranormal investigations with the Lingering Souls paranormal is, I saw a lot of stuff that's really hard to explain away. There's about probably 5% of stuff that I've seen that's like, oh wow, that's really hard to explain away. But there's a lot of stuff you see where people want to hear something and they want to say something, and,
right.
And I'm thinking, oh, that just seems like a car driving past, or that's just so there's a lot of stuff that they want to make bigger than it is. But then you see that 5% and you're like, wow. Like, I had an experience in a prison in Nevada, an abandoned prison, and we were the only two people in the room. And we have a recording, and I said to my friend, I said, okay, something's wrong. You're not acting right. Let's go. And then when we played back the recording, we heard a man's voice say, get out. And there was nobody else in that space with us.
Really? That's what, yeah. So now on these techniques that you've done, so which one, because you said you were very skeptical, right? Mm-hmm. So is there certain techniques that you like to employ more than others when you're doing that kind of stuff? Or,
well, I think that what, because I'm skeptical, when I go to a place that's supposed to be haunted, like we went to that same prison and down the hall, people saw shadow people. Mm-hmm. Because I'm skeptical, I'm not that afraid. So when I saw the shadow person, I went running down the hall, right? To right. see what it was, where everybody else stays back and takes pictures and video. And I'm like running down the hall to see how I can debunk it. Cause really it'd be nice to debunk it because my, the way I feel, if you feel about it, if I couldn't debunk something and I truly felt this was some spirit from after this life, what a wonderful confirmation of there being life after this death, like life after this life. Like when the
yeah, interesting. Well, and what is it? That becomes the big question. Is it, you know, is it a person's soul or is it something else?
Well, I know the Catholic Church leans more towards it being demons trying to trick us, but I mean, other people believe other things. But I had an experience. I'm not a big believer in mediums, but I had an experience with a medium. It was actually going to come on my show. I was interviewing her, like I spoke to you. You know, we had the little pre-interview, and she was telling me stuff about my mother that I was like, "There's no way you possibly could know this stuff." Like she knew obscure facts about my mom from the 80s and 70s that you can possibly not know this thing. Like there's a candy that's been discontinued in Ireland since the 80s, early 80s. That was my mom's favorite candy. And this medium,
what was it?
It's called a flog, which is a really unfortunate name.
Yeah. That's really a terrible name.
Yeah. It's a terrible name. It was basically a marshmallow with this kind of coating on it.
Yeah.
And there's no way she could have known my mom's favorite candy. My mom, who died 11 years ago, grew up in the west of Ireland in Mayo. She could not have known that my mom's favorite candy was a flog. And she could not have known. And she was telling me, your mom's here and she's enjoying some flogs. She said something about how I remember my mom would love going to the beach. I remember really fond memories of her just sitting back on the beach and she was so relaxed. My mom could be a little intense. She could be a little intense at times, but I remember at the beach.
Ate too many flogs.
She would just sit back on the deck chair and she would just eat flogs. And I remember the medium says she's sitting at a beach eating flogs. And I'm like, what? Like I had tears in my eyes. Cause I was like, so when things like that happen, it's like, oh, there has to be something. How could this medium, I don't think it's written anywhere in my social media or anything. Mm-hmm. And this woman is just, she's not even like a medium by profession. She's an author. And she's coming on my show in a few weeks. And it was like, how could you know that? So that, like those kind of experiences, I think are really cool to me. Like the ones that go, I'm a science and math guy, but this is so hard to explain away.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I'm kind of with you there. So yeah, my experiences have been weird as well. And I didn't believe them at the time. It wasn't so much a scared thing as it was a what is going on here kind of a situation.
Yeah,
I didn't know if maybe you had like you know, so like you mentioned you know, hearing the person say get out, and so then I didn't know if you like that technique where you'd record and listen back to it, or I guess you heard it live is the way you were describing it.
Yeah, we have all the devices. I started working with the Lingering Souls Paranormal Group after they came to my house, and they have SLS devices, which are these devices that are used by Xbox 360s to map people, and they use it with an iPad so they can find
SLS camera.
Yeah, SLS camera. We use like EMS detectors. We have RAM pods, which is they beep if the electrical field is. We have all the techniques, but I kind of prefer, honestly. There's an app on the phone which scans thousands of radio signals and then it picks up voices, and some of them are radio signals that we can't typically hear by the human ears. They're not radio stations; they're just radio signals, and they pick up voices in them sometimes. But you know, it's just my son and I, my oldest son, which is he's a major skeptic, clearly heard my youngest son say, "Hey, Dad, come back here," and And I asked him, what did you hear? And he said, I heard my youngest son calling us back there. And I was like, that's what I heard. And we heard the exact same thing.
That's
and
wild,
how do you explain that? And I have to say, hearing my children voices being mimicked has a big creep factor, but
yeah, I was going to say that would be something that would not be comfortable, right? Because
yeah,
now you have to, you constantly are thinking, is this, you know, live or is this Memorex or whatever? Weird, right?
That is there's a big creep factor with that for sure.
Wild.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, so I started doing a show because I've always wanted to do one, and it became a hobby, and then it started to get noticed by people, and now I've got a pretty regular audience, and hopefully more people will tune in, and it's just silly. It's not the same any week, so it's different every week, and people, some people are better than others. Your show is really good, which your show is actually going to be broadcast on July 3rd, which is, you know, when I said that with you, I didn't realize, but it's perfect. You're like the season opener of season 3 on July 3rd. So
look at that, season opener.
So you're the season 3 opener.
Hey, that's great. The so you're doing the show and so forth, and you're doing a lot of stuff. But we talked a little bit. Maybe we didn't talk in the show about this. I'm trying to remember now, but. There's other things you wanted to do as well besides this show. Did you want to talk about that at all? You had an idea that you were contemplating?
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of trying to do something like next summer. I'm kind of working around this idea of doing some big event to promote the show and also to promote storytelling across America. Mm-hmm. So me and a friend were working on getting a team to get together to literally to scooter across America and stop in little towns along the way and have people read AI generated stories. So maybe like I'm talking about Oregon to Maine. I'm talking about on one of those little stand up lime type scooters. I'm talking about doing it. And I would be the one that would ride and maybe another per person. And kind of like I'm not saying it's this big, but the Netflix show with Ewan McGregor, The Long Way Around, which you mm-hmm. know that show. Where he rides his bike around the world.
But
those shows but also what I want to do is I want to, you know, there's so many stories in our country that people know and people tell each other in cafes and like everywhere in bars across the country. And I thought it'd be cool to just go to these little towns across America and find people who just tell stories and have them tell stories on my radio show.
Now, you mentioned that you live in a smaller town. Obviously, mm-hmm. I live in the St. Louis metro, but I don't live in St. Louis. And so I live in kind of a, you know, what do you want to call it? An outskirt, you know, a town on the outskirts of things. What is it? And obviously, if people haven't figured out yet, you're not from the United States. You're from Ireland.
No, yeah.
And but what attracts you to the nature, you know, what attracts you to small towns as opposed to, you know, going just to big cities or something? Because you specifically have mentioned now small towns as being kind of a target point. What's the attraction?
Well, I think that, I think I'm open to go to cities too, to be honest, but I'm kind of thinking of maybe I'm being nostalgic, this boy who came from Ireland to America, this nostalgic American, you know, Marty McFly's small little American town that you see in the movies and stuff.
Right.
Maybe there's some nostalgia attached to that, but I'm open to go to, but I think that, I know that I live close to Sacramento, and I know that the small towns seem to have people who sometimes feel a little bit more authentic. And I'm really about authenticity. I mean, I don't want, I'm not looking for fakeness. I'm looking for a performance. I want that old guy that everybody knows. In my town here, we all know this old guy who tells stories. And he's the one, like when the TV company came to do the episode at my house, they went and met with him because he's the guy who tells stories about town mm-hmm. and tells stories about the history of the town. And I just think I think every community has this person. And I think maybe maybe this is just my perception. I think they're harder to find in the city because people don't have as big of interpersonal connection in the city, I think.
And right. So, yeah. Well, like, and everybody would know they'd know these stories because the smaller community, that's just what happens, right?
Yeah. Everybody knows Tom, and everybody knows what Tom does, and everybody knows the stories he tells. And my friends who live in this city don't tend to know their neighbors sometimes. So, right. I mean, and I think in Ireland, I grew up in a small town, and I think Ireland until probably the 2000s was pretty much all small towns except for Dublin, and Dublin wasn't even that big. So I think I grew up in, there was no freeway from my town to Dublin. It was all country, windy country roads, and the whole country was like that until all the computer companies came in the 2000s.
They had their tax laws were amenable, I guess you'd say.
I think they got tax-free for a number of years. And,
yeah.
Intel invested a lot of money in the country. I mean, the reason they freeways is because of Intel. So around Dublin. So, I mean, they invested in the country for sure. But the whole culture of Ireland has changed. It used to be kind of my microphone is falling. Hey, maybe the ghost doesn't want me to talk. my microphone moved itself right there. It did it again. It used to be when I left Ireland in the early 90s, there was nothing for people from 20 to 35 there. And now it's a haven for people of 25 to 35, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's become a big, and it was a leader in gay rights in Europe. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the safest countries in Europe to be gay in and to be free and to do whatever makes you happy, once it's within the parameters of the law.
Sure. So I've actually been to Dublin, oddly enough. It's been a while, but I've been there. It wasn't very nice. I was there for just a few days, but very nice, walkable. When I was there, I walked around a lot.
Yeah, you probably went to Trinity and Temple Bar and the old couple street.
I can't remember all we went. We walked around all over the place. There was some statue. I can't remember the name of Mary. Somebody a statue. We had to go
Molly somewhere. Malone.
Molly Malone. That's it. There you go. Yeah. Had to go see that.
Yeah, she used to be right there at the beginning of O'Connell Street, which is a pedestrian street there that goes all the way to St. Stephen's Green in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And that's right beside, Molly Malone is right beside Trinity College, which is the big famous college that been there since the 13th century or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm skewed toward looking at older architecture and things. So, yeah, we saw all that.
Yeah, I'm a big urban explorer. I like to go and see the old architecture and buildings. I drive around and just think about the history of the people, who lived there 100 years ago.
So let's loop back to the scooter. So you want to ride this scooter across the country and collect stories along the way.
Yeah.
And then do you want to do something with it after that? Or is just the experience of doing it?
Well, the stories are going to be broadcast on my show. And also I'm bringing I have a friend who's going to be in charge of, I'm going to have a film crew with me and they're going to record it. Aspirations to make it a documentary, of course, too, kind of storytelling across America. I'm kind of tossing around the idea of adding a funny element. I think I told you about the Ground is Lava America edition.
Right.
So the idea is, we don't touch the ground. I don't touch the ground.
Yeah, you can't get off the scooter.
I can't get off the scooter. I can't touch the ground from Oregon to Maine,
Or you can only get on to, in order to do interviews and things, you'd have to be on to maybe a little more stable platform. I couldn't imagine just going around in circles while you're talking to somebody. But
Probably I could jump onto the back. We'd probably have a support vehicle and we could have our information there. I think what I do, I'll put parameters on. You can't touch the ground maybe between the hours of 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. or something like
that. There you go. Okay.
So, and after four, when I'm into town, I could get off and meet people because obviously I'd have to go to bed and because I could probably only do 200-300 miles a day on the scooter, right?
Yeah. Oh, if that, don't you think? Yeah. That's very long distance on a scooter, I would think.
It is. But I'm the kind of some scooters can go 50, 60 miles an hour. So, I'm working on a sponsor deal for that, but to get some scooters. But, I'm always, the way my brain works is I can't just talk about things. I talked about doing the podcast, so I did it. I made I made a movie. The reason I got into this TV station is because I the year before I won a scriptwriting competition and I made a movie because I won this. I was one of the 10 people picked called Place Called Sacramento. And I made my movie, and then I was involved in the TV station, which is also a radio station. And that's how I realized, oh, they might let me make a podcast here or a radio show. So that was the sequence of events. But my movie was featured, a premiere on the big screen and everything. That was really fun.
What was the name of it?
My movie was called Dad Breaks, and it was about, you know how when your dad's driving with you in the car and the son's driving, and the dad's hitting the ground, you know, where... And like you're telling him, you know, hey, those brakes don't work, you know, on the passenger side brakes.
Right.
So those brakes are called dad brakes. And it's about a gay dad teaching his son how to drive and the comedy that involved in that and the characters they come across. So it's called Dad Breaks and probably be seen on YouTube.
Yeah. So everybody should look it up there. We didn't talk about this last time.
Yeah. So,
that's interesting. So you wrote this. So there was a contest of some kind. You wrote the script for this, and they're like, "Okay, this is the winner." And then did they help you make it, or they just said, "Go make it"?
Well, they helped me make it. They gave me the resources and the platform and the equipment, and so they helped me make it. I had to find a crew myself, but actually, I kept the crew really small because. Mm-hmm. It's hard to rely on people when you're doing stuff like that, like volunteer theater, you know? So I kept it pretty small. So I wrote it, filmed it, directed it, edited it. And I was actually in it too for part. I had a small part. I was the partner of the dad who was teaching his son how to drive, but I just had a small part at the beginning and end. So, and I found
a lot of fun.
I found friends who, I was very lucky to find friends. The two main actors in it one of them used to work for Disney on a TV show called Even Steven. The other one is had done some acting, and I don't know if we want to talk about this in show, but he went on to do some other acting afterwards of an older adult type variety.
Okay.
One of my actors is doing adult acting now, and he's actually very successful in it.
Oh, well, good for him.
Yeah, he's making a lot of money, and probably a lot of people.
But that sounds fascinating, though. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of like it's one of those things that happens, but you don't think about it, right? So this thing, and then, you know, I don't know how many people would be involved in all this, but it's kind of neat that you're the one that got to have this experience.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I have a background in film. I worked in the film industry until I was 25 in Hollywood. I didn't really like the town, so I left, went back to school to be a teacher. So it was nice to come back to it a little bit. You know, it was a passion for a long time. And then probably the reason I got into radio is because, I mean, my voice is beautiful, of course, but no, I'm joking. I'm not being arrogant. But the production was a lot of work. It pretty much consumed 3 months of my life making this film. And radio feels easier because I don't have to do the makeup and the hair. You know, maybe I've got a face for radio.
It's not as complicated. Yeah.
I can be creative and I can just sit in front of a mic and do something fun and interesting. So I thought radio, I've done radio before, but I thought it was fun to get back to radio. And of course, the new radio, as you and I know now, is podcasting. Because I did radio in the 90s before podcasting existed.
Yeah. Me as well. The interesting thing, you said you were in Hollywood until you were 25. So when did you get there? So how many years did you have that experience?
So probably about 2 years there. I originally came to the country when I was 20 years old through a program in London called Camp America, where they recruit people to come over to be a camp counselor over here. And so that's how I originally came. And then I kind of bummed around and did camps for a while and traveled. And then I landed up in LA and started working in film and TV, worked on a few shows, worked on a few ads, worked on a few things, you know. I mean, never anything big, but I mean, I definitely worked on some productions people would know, but I wasn't like the main like assistant director or anything like that, you know.
Right. You were the... You did whatever they were they needed somebody to do, basically.
Yeah, they called them production assistants, but really, that's Hollywood code for whatever we need you to do. Yeah,
right, exactly. It sounds good, but Bill Hader, oddly enough, you say production assistant. Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live, and now Barry, if you watch that show, was a production assistant. Every once in a while, you'll hear him tell a little story when he's doing interviews where he had the his big job of the day was to get the director's coffee.
Well, I remember I worked on a film with a well-known director, and I worked in the editing room, and my job was, luckily I was allowed to be in the editing room, but my job was to just get coffee and tea and food and, you know, empty the trash. And, you know, I was starting to move up and get the better jobs. And, you know, that's the way it works. You got to spend a few years being a production assistant, and then you move up and move up. Unfortunately, I lived in Hollywood at a time when a lot of these scandals that have come out now hadn't come out yet. And so there was kind of an atmosphere in Hollywood of, you know, if you want to make it, you have to be willing to do things that aren't always comfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
so, yeah. You know, well,
the early, the Me Too stuff.
Yeah. The early to mid 90s. So, you know, when I was a younger, cuter, a man, you know, you know, they ask you to come to parties and do things that you sometimes you're not always comfortable with. So unfortunately, that was happening then.
That's too bad. I mean, I'm sure that there's still some of that going on, but I think it got curtailed a bit with the current situations as they are.
Yeah, I think it's definitely still going on, but I think it is a lot less now. I know people in the industry still, and it's definitely, it feels a lot safer, I think, which is good.
Yeah, that's good. So you decided that's not for me. I'm going to be a teacher, but you're still, I mean, so have you, naturalized? Is that what it is? Were you?
Oh yeah, I have. I become naturalized in 2007 is when I become. It took me 10 years. I applied in 1997 and I became naturalized in 2007. Interestingly enough, my premiere of my movie that I made last year, the premiere was in the theater where I just happened, 15 years earlier, I did my swearing in Sacramento. It was in the same theater. Yeah, that was cool.
That's interesting. So that process has got to be, so, I mean, you see it portrayed on TV and so forth, and basically it seems like, at least from that you have a harder go of it becoming a citizen than the citizens.
Oh yeah, for sure. I used to, I was a teacher at the time in Orange County, and I remember I would put the questions, I was a high school teacher, I put the questions that I had to know to pass the test as extra credit on my math tests to see how many of my 11th and 10th graders know the stuff that I'm supposed to know to become a citizen. And overwhelmingly, they don't know, like things like, they wouldn't know what do the stripes on the American flag stand for? You know, a lot of people don't know that. How many stars there are on the American flag? Name a senator from your state right now, you know, who is the Secretary of State? A lot of people don't know these things.
No, yeah, even the flag thing, really. 13 stripes for the colonies, and then there's stars for every state. Although Puerto Rico gets short shrift because it's not a state yet.
Well, a lot of people say, a lot of people say there's 50 states, 52 states, because they think there's 50 on the mainland and then two more. So that's a lot of people.
Really, they don't have the 48 contiguous and then two separate.
A lot of people don't know. You would not believe how many adults I found who think that Alaska is off the coast of Mexico because of the way it's portrayed
on maps. Yeah.
On maps, yeah.
That is so funny. It's funny for us, but it's kind of sad. But being a naturalized citizen, then you had to go through all this. And I mean, to me, it sounds like it would be aggravating. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. None of these people who were born here know any of this stuff, and you're forcing me to, you know, do more. What was the feeling in your group? Because, I mean, aren't you kind of potted together for the sake of efficiencies?
Sometimes they have rules where they put things together, like they blanket rules. Like, I remember we had to take an English test to prove English proficiency. So I'm sitting in a room. There's two people the day I went there. It was me from Ireland, English speaking country, and the other guy was from London, an English Beacon Country, and we had to take a test to prove that we could read and write English, right? And even though we both come from English-speaking countries, and yeah, one of them is from England, the English-speaking country.
Well, they wanted to see how you were going to write color and theater and favorite.
Well, I remember the writing test was, they said to this, write this sentence, the White House has a big tree. And I said, are you referring to the White House where the president lives, which is a proper noun I need to capitalize, mm-hmm, or a house that happens to be white, which wouldn't need to be capitalized? And she said, oh, forget it. You passed. I didn't even have to do the test. But I knew what a proper noun was, right?
Right. That's so funny. Well, it's terrible, though, to be honest. I mean, there should not be, you know, such a barrier to entry. I would think, you know, we have the Statue of Liberty, give us your, mm-hmm, you know, your poor, your tired, your huddled masses, right? And yet, well, wait a minute. You got to know the difference.
Well, the problem is that when there's fees, there's lots of fees involved with becoming a naturalized citizen. So the more fees they are, all you're doing is excluding poor people, right?
Right, right.
Because you're not really, you know, because it's not hard to get through the process. The fees are what excludes people, right? So
sure. Oh, yeah. Well, then they're generating funds. And yeah, it becomes a whole, it obviously becomes not about being a citizen.
But you know, I'm happy to live in the country. I always wanted to live in America, and I still have my Irish and British citizenship. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I was actually born in Britain, but I was, mm-hmm, raised in Ireland. I'm definitely Irish, and I'm Irish and I'm British too by birth. But
right,
I have those citizenships too. So when I travel, my passports, they think I'm Jason Bourne with my three passports. So
right. Well, with Brexit and so forth, did that change things for, yeah, you there? What did you have to do at that point? Whenever they weren't part of the EU anymore.
I didn't really have to do anything. It actually made my British citizenship a little bit more valuable, because now it's not, you know, everybody in Europe used to be able to be British too, but now, mm-hmm, you have to be. So it's actually it's cool to have like British and EU. So my kids, if they ever want to go over there, have an opportunity to live in those countries. Not that after Brexit, I don't know what state Britain is in, to be honest, with how good the economy is, but you've heard of Frexit now, right? They're talking about France doing the same thing.
Oh, so. Well, but France always wanted to be by itself. France is for the French.
Yes.
That's always what that's what they say, at least. I'm surprised they ever jumped in. There must have been some free stuff involved. But
well, it's right in the middle too there.
Yeah. So you've lived in both in Europe and here in the States. Obviously the States a little bit longer now. I'm assuming that you're not 26 or 27 at this point. Not, I'm trying to have your age, but yeah. So the difference between the two, I mean, give me the goods and the bads on both sides of that.
I do think there's people in Ireland and Europe are a little bit more civically minded. And what I mean by that is, like, it comes out in the way people drive, you know. It feels like in Europe, people will get out of your way if you're driving faster. It seems like in Europe, if you come to a T, people will stop and let you in. And it feels like people open doors. And it feels like in European cities, there's trash cans and public bathrooms everywhere. Because I don't understand where they expect people to go to the bathroom in San Francisco, because there's nowhere to go.
Right, exactly.
And I think they're a little bit more, civically minded. I don't know if it comes from, you know, I'm American and I'll do everything my own and I'll do it my own way. But I do think, job wise and opportunity wise, there's a lot more opportunity here in this country. And, the reason I came is, well, maybe it's not so much now, but when I came, it's because I did badly in high school and there was no opportunity for me to go to college in Europe. So I came over here and I discovered community college, and mm-hmm, now I have a master's degree, you know, so I could really have a second chance here.
Why wouldn't you be able to go to college over there? Is there different rules and so forth?
Yeah, it's, They have a system called, I don't know exactly sure what it's called, but it's an old British system of points. So the grades you get in high school are points, and your points are added up, and that's what qualifies you for different programs to go to college, right? Mm-hmm. So if you, like me, barely got out of high school with D minuses and everything, I didn't get, I hardly get any points. And so I was only qualified to do a very limited amount of things. At the time, there was no path for me to go to college and university in Ireland. There is now, I think. So here they go to community college. They track you in Ireland. I didn't even do science for the last 2 years of high school, because in the middle of high school, you take a test called the intermediate test in Europe, mm-hmm. in Ireland. And depending on that, they track you into a trade or some other job. And because I didn't do well in that test either, mm-hmm. I'm better at testing now, I promise. Because I didn't do that test, I was tracked off. They track you off into. So I was doing building construction classes and carpentry classes and accounting classes because they thought I was going to work in a building site or something like that.
Really?
So they do that. And that's a test you take when you're 13, 14 years old. So they're deciding your future at that age, right?
That's weird.
Yeah, I didn't even take science class for the last 2 years of high school because they tracked me off into other things. Trades. So that's an old system of tracking, which I'm not a big fan of, but I think they've changed a lot and there's a lot more opportunities in Ireland now. But thank God America had community college. You know, I went to community college and figured out I'm actually really good at math, you know, and I've had A's in every math class I've ever taken. Mm-hmm. And so, because I started at 25, that's why. And that's funny. It's so I think there's opportunity. I do think that, I do think America in the last few years have got a little bit more problems. It used to be a lot more free. Mm-hmm. I think we have problems with, in this country. But I think overall, I do like living here. I do. I think there's been a lot more opportunity for me here to build a life that I wanted. So
now you would have been of an age in Ireland where there was conflict, right?
Yes.
And so were you anywhere close to any of that or?
Well, I definitely saw some conflict. I remember running from I don't know, I'm laughing at that, but I remember running from a mall when I was in high school because of a bomb scare. Mm-hmm. It used to be in the early 90s, maybe 80s. If you drove to Northern Ireland, you would have to go through the border and they would literally point guns right directly at you because that was what they did. Not because they were trying to threaten you, but their system was you're pointing guns at people because of ambushes and stuff. And, you know,
right.
And, you know, there is some family connection with me. And my uncle's name is Frank Stagg. I'll let people look him up. But he's a figure in Irish history related to the Troubles. So definitely had some connection.
Do you guys call them the Troubles? Is that what people refer
to? I'm saying that because that's what I think I've heard them called in America a lot. Oh, okay. A lot of people think it's a Catholic Protestant thing, and I don't think it is a Catholic Protestant thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's a British Irish thing, and the Irish happen to be Catholic, and the British happen to be a Protestant, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're not fighting because they're Catholic and Protestant. I think they're fighting because they're British and Irish and other reasons, which I'm trivializing, of course. There's a lot more depth to it than that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it has to do with self-rule, right? So Ireland wants to rule itself.
Yeah, well, it comes from when Éamon de Valera went to England to negotiate freedom for Ireland in the 20s, and he came back with all but six counties in the north, and there was division in the Irish government wanting all or nothing, and the Irish government was happy. The people that became the Irish government were happy with taking the 26 and leaving the six up in Northern Ireland. And so that's what the conflict is. The people who want all counties given back to Ireland, you know.
Yeah. And not to, you know, pick on Ireland, but the Scottish, they didn't have quite the, the violence, but same thing, right? They wanted to rule them, you know, they want to take care of themselves and not be part of the,
But recently the referendum was voted no when they voted in Scotland to break from Britain, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's a constant, but I mean there still is a decent amount of people who want to do it, but maybe not enough.
Well, I mean, the British is influenced, you know. When you go to India, you still see a lot of British influence, and you go to some Caribbean islands, there's still a lot of British influence. I think there's a Caribbean, is it St. Martin that uses pounds still?
Yeah, I think so.
And there was, so there's a lot of British influence around the world. I mean, obviously here too, there's a lot of, you know, British influence in this country.
Oh, sure.
I do think people need to know that the myth of national health is not that wonderful in Europe as people think, right? It's a lot of waiting and wait list, and it's not easy to get into a doctor. So I do think we should have universal health care in this country, but it's not as easy as people think when I grew up in Ireland with it. So
we don't want the NHS over here is what you're saying.
You don't want the NHS. You mean, you wait for 3 years for a basic like surgery you could get next week if you have insurance in this country, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, and that's one of those tough things, right? So you brought it up because it shouldn't be this complicated, right? It shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, especially
you take care of people, and that's what you should. That should be the reflex.
Well, I think if you bring people down to the micro, like even people who we see are saying, "Don't give them anything." I think if you looked at their life, they probably help lots of people, their neighbors, people in the church and stuff. But for some reason, when people start thinking macro, they say, no, don't give any of that stuff away. But I think the heart of people is to help when you get down to them as people, I think. So I don't know why
I don't understand the logic in a lot of people there. I mean, it's going to cost so much money. It's like, everything costs so much money. That's just the way of the system, right?
But how about cut the military budget by 5% and then
that becomes, now you're getting into those arguments, Doyle.
I thought we were telling funny stories. I was going to tell you funny stories about Irish donuts. I didn't know we were going to get into
political. I just was curious because I'm not obviously as familiar as yourself on those kind of things over there, but somewhat familiar and curious, and so I figured I'd ask the question. But yeah, let's get some more lighter fare. So Irish donuts.
Oh, it's just a funny story that happened to me. So I was working in a prison, and I always used to talk about how better donuts are in Ireland, and they were more bready. They were more like, it wasn't like you were, they weren't soft like they were here. And I always complained I couldn't get Irish like donuts over here. And then one day a person brought donuts into work and they tasted like Irish donuts. And I was like, where did you get these? Where in this country can you buy these donuts? And he said, oh, they're day old donuts from Safeway. So it turns out what I thought Irish donuts were was my mother just buying day old donuts my whole childhood. So.
But a fond memory, right?
So, yeah, and now every time they brought donuts in, they call them Irish donuts now. So
that's funny. Yeah, I grew up with the day old bread store too, and all of our treats were, you know, old treats basically. They would go from, I guess, the bread companies would, whenever they took them out of the name brand stores, they brought them to the day old store, and then you could get them cheaper there. That's funny. And so I do have fond memories of that as well, where you would get these kind of weird treats that weren't the average. But, you know, when you're little, you don't really know.
My mom had lots of kids, and so she had to make things work the way she made things work. Yeah. And she did. You know, we always had a great Christmas. I can't believe how much stuff she managed to get every Christmas, and we always had a big Christmas. And we didn't have a lot of money throughout the year, but we always had good Christmases. We always ate. So we always had our books and our school uniforms. So she made it work.
That's fantastic. Well, I keep going back and forth between Trevor and Doyle, but would you rather call you Doyle?
I go by Doyle because unfortunately, and I've said this on my radio show, if people look up Trevor Doyle, which is my name, radio host, there's a radio host named Trevor Doyle who did some bad things. And so I don't want to be, I'm trying to disassociate myself from him. So gotcha. I go by Doyle on the show because, and I kind of like the idea, just Doyle, like Cher.
Yeah. Okay, Doyle. I'll call you Doyle. Sorry, I'm at the end here, and I'm just now calling you Doyle. But you know.
Okay. Well, it's okay.
Better late than never, as they say. Just like the NHS. That's their motto. Better late than never.
Unfortunately, sometimes people died waiting on the wait list.
Right. but they don't count because they're dead, and it doesn't matter.
They're off the wait list, I guess.
They're off the list, right? Yeah, they opened up a slot.
That's sad. I wish people were more people oriented and not money oriented. So
Doyle, thank you very much for being here today and talking about your show and about your a little bit about your hopes and dreams and also your past, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah,
everybody, please go to spirittalkshow.com or .info and take a listen. It's really quite fun to listen and also to do. So yeah. I mean, you can hit him up and see if he'll let you read some stories on his show as well, and then we'll be watching for the electric scooter cross-country electric scooter storytelling thing.
Yes.
And and hopefully that will all come to fruition. And and to the ghost in your house, it would have been great if you would have popped up back there, but I understand you don't necessarily want to do people's biddings.
Yes.
But I want you to have peace and tranquility in your afterlife. Thanks, everybody. Hold on a second, Doyle, while I hit some buttons. And everybody else, we'll see you next time.
Bye.